All right, y'all, welcome back to another episode of Hashtag CB99 Talks. This is episode 56, and of course, I'm Combo Breaker 99. All right, y'all, back with another episode, back to talk this WMMA thing and boxing thing with y'all like we always do. Man, I meant to come back, you know, towards the end of the week, you know, end of last week, the weekend, and do an episode with y'all, but it was my birthday weekend. It was my birthday weekend this past weekend. So, yeah, I was busy, man. You know, we had a fight overload on Friday. You know, Bellator, Invicta. I had to spend the whole weekend watching fights, you know, late Saturday night into Sunday. So I got on with the live stream with y'all and just talked a little bit about the fights. But I really wanted to do an episode talking about the previous weekend, you know, the flyweights, that, you know, the flyweight fights that took place last weekend, as well as some boxing. So, you know, now that two weekends have passed, you know, I'm going to kind of play catch up, talk about the previous weekend, you know, as far as, you know, the flyweight winners, you know, those previous fights. And boxing, you know, there's been some good news in boxing. So what we're going to do, we're going to kick it off with WMMA talk. Then the core will be boxing. And then we'll wrap it up with some more WMMA, you know, if that sounds good to y'all, man. But yeah, man, missed the episode last week. It was kind of good to just kind of chill out for 2 days and, you know, get away and just do some other things, you know, did some walking, some running in as well, getting some miles in and just doing some, you know, walks on trails and stuff like that, you know. But I'm always thinking the fight game, you know, I'm always still thinking about it, but I just had to get away, you know, enjoy my birthday, you know, just kind of enjoy that time to myself. But yeah, man, first up, like I said, I kind of want to go back and talk about the previous weekend, you know, the winners of the previous flyweight fights. You know, I want to go back to and talk about Viviana Rujo a little bit. First, I'm going to talk about Zombie Girl Priscilla Cachoeira, Caitlin Chikeg, and her call out of Alexa Grasso. You know, just talk a little bit about that, because I like what I'm hearing. You know, everybody's kind of trying to find their own lane, and that's what the theme of this episode kind of is, you know, is find your own lane. Whether you're talking about Priscilla Cachoeira, I've kind of found her lane for her, which is what I want to talk about in this episode. Caitlin Chikeg has kind of found her lane. And yeah, just want to go back and, you know, discuss those. Also, in the boxing world, Deontay Wilder gets his rubber match with Tyson Fury. You know, so I got to give you my thoughts on that, some details, you know, that went down as far as the politics and the drama. I won't spend too much time on that. I'm just glad the fight is made. And that's what I really want to talk about, just the fight at this point, the significance of the fight, and so on. You know, we can kind of go from there. And to wrap the episode up, we will talk about this past weekend just a little bit. You know, we'll talk about the main fight, you know, Jan Zhanna and Carla Esparza. What's next for Carla Esparza? Let's talk this Rose Namajunas rematch up a little bit. But coming tomorrow, Invicta FC on Access TV, I'm going to be dropping just a full episode on that alone, you know, because, you know, it was like six fights. And I didn't do any post-fight analysis on these as videos, but I'm going to just drop that as a whole episode just to fill y'all in. Like, if I don't drop it tomorrow, y'all be getting that either Wednesday or Thursday this week. So, yeah, I'm going to do a full recap on that card, so be on the lookout for that episode. But yeah, man, previous weekend was good fights. You know, UFC 262 was solid. You know, the overall card, you know, the men, you know, over, you know, as a whole, you know, the men's fights were solid as well. They were action-packed, but, you know, like I said, we covered WMMA over here a lot. And first off, you know, I just want to say shout out to Gina Mazzani. You know, she put in the work, you know, she built herself back up. You know, worked on her skill, hooked up with James Krause, but she just couldn't get the win, man, because when it came down to it, Priscilla Cachoeira, she's just one of those fighters that's dedicated to what she does. You know, she has that will, and it really came down to will versus skill in this fight. That's why I went with Gina Mazzani. I feel like she had the better skill, and she was going to use her IQ to really just go in there and nullify what Priscilla Cachoeira brings to the table, man. But when you think about it, this fight, let me see, it had a similar tone to, I think the casual fans, they'll understand me better if I use this comparison. Rose Namajunas versus Jessica Andrade, the first fight. That fight was probably the best example, you know, as far as will versus skill. You know, Rose, much better skilled fighter, technical fighter over Jessica Andrade. But when it came down to will and always coming for a way to win, that's Jessica Andrade all day long, you know. Jessica Andrade is that fighter that says, look, you got to stop me. You got to kill me in there. That's the only way I'm going to stop coming, you know. And I think Priscilla Cachoeira had that same mind frame. Okay, you can use your wrestling on me, but it's only going to work for this amount of time, because the minute you let me up, I'm going to take you out. And that's what Priscilla Cachoeira did. You know, that's what she was able to do. So what I just wanted to talk about with Priscilla Cachoeira getting this win, I think she kind of found her own lane in the game, man. Like, honestly, as long as she continues to put on exciting fights like this, and, you know, she's dapping Dana up for, you know, increasing that finish bonus, which now she got, you know, $75,000. I think that's a plus for her, because, you know, now that she can continue to put on exciting fights like this, because everybody I know in the WMMA world, they enjoy Cachoeira's fights. You know, those she's not even ranked, they enjoy watching her come to put on a beating or take a beating. You know what I mean? Like, she's that type of fighter that likes to come in and just put on an exciting fight. That's why they call her the zombie girl, because she keeps coming. You know, so I think she has that lane where people will come to watch her fight. And as long as they put her in there with, like, an unranked fighter, or, you know, maybe like a 11 through 15, you know, she could possibly slowly get her way back to the top. But as long as she comes in there and, you know, gets these fights with these opponents at this level, she will be an attraction, you know, and that's a good steady check for her. You know, she gets paid to fight, goes in there and stops these fighters, that's $75,000 for her, you know, whether she gets a title shot again or not. But that's probably the best lane for a fighter like her. You know, that's probably the best lane for her. Not saying eventually that she wouldn't want to get to the top, but, you know, we never know. So until then, that could just be her lane, you know. But as for Gina Mazzani, I don't know. I don't know what could be next for her in this division. You know, the muscle might be a problem. She might have been sacrificing a gas tank to look this, you know, this look this shredded and make this weight and get this lean. You know, that's a part of the compromise. You move down in weight if you're a thicker girl. You know, she spent most of her career at 135, so moving down to 125 now could have been the problem, you know. So that's something she probably have to kind of rethink. But yeah, moving on to the next fight that took place was Antonina Shevchenko and Andrea Lee. That was like a fight I was not really confident in at all. Like, I've seen, you know, Andrea Lee through some wars, you know, I've seen her in, you know, plenty of her fights, and, you know, I've seen her on the downside, which I've been saying, you know, she's been on the downside. But I honestly couldn't say that Antonina Shevchenko was going to blow her out just because she was on a 3-fight losing streak. And that's why I'm saying, like, fighters on a 3-fight losing streak like Andrea Lee, you can't count them out. Like, if anything, you better be worried, because she's been on that raw end of these close decisions. So knowing that she's always going to be on that end of that controversial decision like that, that kind of amps a fighter up. They're either going to do one or two things. They're going to continue to take it the same way, take it how it comes, or they're going to step their game up and look to be a finisher. You know, that's what I'm saying, like, Angela Hill needs to do, like what Andrea Lee did the previous Saturday. You got to start finishing fighters. You got to start taking that approach to finish them on the feet or on the ground, because Andrea Lee knew that if I try to fight this girl standing, you know, and I just keep it standing, then eventually this fight might go back and forth. It might go tit for tat, and I might wind up losing again like I did against Lauren Murphy. So Andrea Lee took a well-educated approach in this fight, so I had to give her credit. I had to give her credit because, you know, she put everything together in this fight, her ground game, her stand-up game, and it came together, and she just dominated Antonina Shevchenko. So I think she just saved her career. You know, she definitely saved her career. She killed that losing streak, and now she could probably move on to something else, maybe like the Macy or Miranda winner. So, you know, fighters have to find their lane, man. They just have to understand their strengths in the game and kind of ride with it. You know, if that's what they're made to do, then do it. Antonina Shevchenko, she kind of needs to find her lane. You know, right now, she really needs to find her lane. I don't know if fighting at flyweight is going to be suited for her. I don't even know if 135 is a good weight for her. Hell, I don't even know if fighting is good for her, you know, in mixed martial arts right now, because it just seems like it's not coming together like it is with some of these other fighters. You know, I'm not even going to compare it to her sister, because they're totally different people. I'm just going to compare her to the flyweights that are near her, you know, where fighters like Manon Firo are, Miranda Maverick, Taylor Santos, those fighters, they're growing. You know, they're constantly growing. So I feel like Antonina Shevchenko has to really find who she is in there and reignite that flame at 37. You know, see if this is really what she really wants to do, you know. So let me know what y'all think, though, because I think that Andrea Lee, she definitely found something. kind of working out with, working and training with Tisha Torres. I think that kind of helped build her up mentally, which is a good thing. You know, she definitely has some positive energy around her now. So, you know, hopefully that something good comes out. I'm not really a big Andrea Lee fan, like I said, but hey, if she puts it together, I give her respect on that. I got to give respect as a fighter on that. Viviana Arrujo, though, man. Viviana Arrujo, man, in that fight with Caitlin Chookagian, I just saw so many things wrong. I just saw so many things where Viviana Arrujo, in my eyes, she did enough to win the fight, but she didn't do enough to make a statement and make me say that she is top contender material, you know? Like, this is something I said. Well, I'll get to that part, you know, towards the end of this segment. But Viviana Arrujo going into this fight, she was really going to have to make this big statement against Caitlin Chookagian. She was really going to have to take a page out of what Jessica Andrade, was able to do, you know, really put pressure and just kind of disrespect the skill set of Caitlin Chookagian. And that's what you have to do against a fighter like Caitlin Chookagian. You can't let her get settled. You can't let her use her IQ. You got to draw her into a firefight, or at least you got to go in there and just take full control. Never let her lead the dance. You know, she's that striking, she's that point fighter, that striking type, that boxer type, that if you let her lead the dance, you know, she's gonna school you. You know, she will school you, whether, you know, she's not hurting you. I know her style is like, a lot of people aren't fans of her style because she's not really doing damage, but it's a frustrating style. It's a chaotic style that I got to give her a lot of credit for, because, you know, she rides it. And a lot of fighters, they just don't know how to handle it. You know, unless you're talking about the elites, like Andrade, she can handle it. Valentina, of course, can handle it. But, you know, if you're not really from the fundamentals of familiar with the fundamentals of boxing to that core, you know, then you're really going to get taken to school by Caitlin Chookagian. And that's what happened. Like, I think Viviana Arrujo did enough to win the fight, but there was just too many moments where she was letting a lot of moments slip. Like, this is how boxers win some of their fights. The boxers without power, this is how they win their fights. Like I said, when you go in there shoe shining, or you go in there just kind of piling up points and you know how to steal rounds, kind of like the Leonard Hagler fight. You know, some people felt Hagler won, some people felt Leonard won. But, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard, he knew how to steal the rounds. He knew how to go in there and kind of frustrate Hagler, and he knew how to take it to Hagler at the right time, and maybe like every 30 seconds into the round, you know, he would know how to put his hands on Hagler so it would leave a everlasting, if you will, impression on the judges, you know, and that's what you got to do. Rest in peace to Marvin Hagler. But, you know, Viviana Arrujo, she had some good moments in the first round. She won it with efficient punches, but something about it, if I was in her corner, would say, I don't know, you let some moments slip. You let Caitlin Chookagian put hands on you too much. Like, she wasn't doing damage, but she was touching you too much. So the judges might not give it to you. I would say, look, go in the second round, take this fight to the ground and dominate, which she did. I felt like she did enough to win the second round. Then the third round came. It was just all Caitlin. Like, she just lost every bit of fuel in her tank, let Caitlin school her, and that was it. Like, when I saw that scorecard 30-27, I thought that was BS, but then I was like, again, it came down to the touching. You just let her continue to touch you over and over. So that's just something that Viviana Arrujo has to work on, you know, pacing in a fight to get her gas tank right, you know, to kind of compromise with her gas tank and her IQ. You know, be smart in there. You know, be smart. Say, look, okay, this fighter has this, so I have to take this away from him. Or this fighter has this, they're going to try to outpoint me and, you know, impress the judges. You know, so that's just something that she really has to think about, man. Like, again, I think Viviana Arrujo losing the fight was a blessing in disguise, because I think that if they would have gave her the decision, though, I would have been, like, scared for her, honestly, man, because I would have been like, yo, you go in there with Valentina Shevchenko like this, with this type of gas tank and this type of approach, you'll really get hurt. You're really going to get hurt. So all in all, I felt like it was a blessing in disguise that she didn't get it. You know, it's a learning experience. So with that, you know, Caitlin Chookagian calling out Alexa Grasso now. I like it on that boxing, as a boxing fan, because she said she had the better boxing. We don't know if it'll actually turn out to be a boxing match, but if that's the lane she wants, and she wants to continue to kind of frustrate and upset these contenders, bring it on. And, you know, I'm just saying, like, I would prefer she fight up and call for a rematch with Valentina Shevchenko, because she has that, she does have that strong resume to stand on. You know, Caitlin Chikagan knows that, but I think Caitlin's trying to get these bags. And like I said, she's got her lane. She knows what she's doing. She might cap it off with the Valentina Shevchenko rematch, her career. We don't know, but right now she's just trying to fight down, I think, to just get another bag against Alexa Grasso, maybe like headline a card, and try to beat her, then try to get that rematch. But overall, I think Alexa Grasso has the better boxing, which I talked about in the video already. But I think Alexa Grasso will have to deal with that IQ, and, you know, she'll just have to deal with that experience, really. But if it came down to better boxing, but it would be with Alexa Grasso. But is Caitlin really going to want to box with her? That's the question. You know, Caitlin's going to want to win the fight, and Caitlin does have an IQ. And if you give her a chance, Caitlin will take a fight, you know. So, yeah. But, yeah, overall, that was a good weekend of WMMA. You know, I enjoyed the fights. You know, it was 0-3 for me. every single one of my picks lost last week, man, because it was like you can't really call these fights. You know, fight math never adds up. And just the thing that all three of these fights were 50-50. All three of the fights were really going to be competitive, and that's what I like. Like, if I'm 0-3, it doesn't piss me off. It doesn't upset me. That just lets me know we had good fights. Like, the harder the fight to call, then usually the better the fight is going to be for me. You know, I don't always want an easy prediction, you know, because the easier the prediction, that's just saying that, okay, that fighter doesn't need to be in there with that person because they're not that good. You know what I mean? So it is what it is when it comes down to being 0-3. Like I said, it wasn't nothing to be mad about. I'm still predicting fights. Hey, I got one right this past week. I got a few right this past weekend. I got a lot right this past weekend, man. But let's switch gears, y'all. Let's switch gears to boxing real quick. Good news, as y'all know, everybody's been talking about this over the past 2 weeks now, so I'm just kind of giving you my thoughts. So Deontay Wilder, he finally gets his third fight with Tyson Fury. His arbitrator ruled in favor of Deontay Wilder to get his third fight by September 15th, which is good news, you know. And that's why a lot of people were always wondering why Fury Joshua wasn't taking place. This was the holdup. You know, a lot of people didn't really want to believe that, but I was kind of thinking that myself. Like, I'm not in, you know, ties with any of the camp or any of that media, but, you know, I was just wondering why Fury Joshua never happened. Like, I know that there was a pandemic. I knew that was going on, but throughout the past few months, you know, whenever boxing started coming back, you know, after the, I think it was, what, December, like, when I think Spence Garcia had their fight with a crowd, and I think there was a few DAZN cards that had their fights open with crowds. I thought that Fury Joshua would have been a go, but then I was like, well, no, because Wilder's still trying to get his rubber match, and that was in the contract. So I was like, what's the holdup for real? And this really turned out to be the holdup. You know, Deontay Wilder was having this stuff worked out in court with Tyson Fury. You know, Tyson Fury was really trying to ignore that and trying to push ahead, or at least give the illusion that they were going to push ahead with the two-fight deal with Anthony Joshua. You know, they kept saying, oh, we got a contract. Oh, contract signed or signed. Turns out they weren't signed. Bob Arum, Eddie Hearn, Tyson Fury, everybody wanted to continue to try to push this August date on the boxing fans, but Anthony Joshua never really said anything. You know, he never really said anything for good reason, because the fight wasn't taking place. Because you had Deontay Wilder saying, look, no, I'm getting my rubber match. I'm getting my rubber match, but if we don't get it, you'll have to pay in damage. You know, like, rumor was they tried to offer Wilder $20 million to step aside. Even again, like I said, $80 million in damages they would have to pay if they didn't give him his rubber match. But, you know, Wilder, he refused that step aside money because he wants his revenge and he wants his redemption. So now, politics aside, Fury Joshua has to be on hold. And Wilder and Tyson Fury, they're going to run it back. Supposedly, they're going to run it back July 24th in Vegas at Allegiant Stadium. So, yeah, the end. Now we finally got the fight, right? So, yeah, my thoughts, though, I'm glad the fight was made. I mean, really, man, I was just tired of the politics and the lies, you know, about a Joshua fight being made. And at this point, really, I just wanted to see a fight. I really just wanted to see a fight, whether it be Deontay Wilder, Tyson Fury, or Anthony Joshua. However y'all want to mix it up, just fight. I was really getting sick of this. You know, I was really getting sick of this. I mean, these three are the top fighters in the heavyweight division. So no matter how you mix it up, it was going to be good. You know, it was going to be good. So I just wanted to fight. I mean, Tyson Fury, Wilder, they haven't been in the boxing ring since February. So fans just get pretty much just getting restless like I was. I was like, whoever's going to fight, somebody fight. So I don't know why there's a lot of boxing fans and even just like Tyson Fury fans and UK fans or even American fans, why they're pissed off that Wilder got a third match. They should be glad we're getting a solid boxing match between the elite guys in the heavyweight division. So anybody complaining might as well be quiet. So my thoughts, I like this fight. Both fighters are going to bring an exciting style. They have a rivalry. It makes sense. I mean, I know how the last fight went, but with all the controversy aside, it was an entertaining fight. It was an entertaining fight, which I will talk about here in a minute as far as, you know, Deontay Wilder coming back against Tyson Fury, which, yeah, definitely got to talk about that part. But real quick, another point I want to cover is just, you know, Wilder receiving a lot of hate for this fight, you know, now that he got it. Because, you know, a lot of boxing Facebook pages I follow, they say the same thing, man. They're like, oh, man, like, this guy's going to get killed. Wilder doesn't deserve it. I lost a lot of respect for him because he made a lot of excuses. Excuses aside, at least this guy's willing to take a fight. At least he's willing to fight the best. Now that we got somebody wanting to fight the best, it seems like everybody still has a complaint. And that's my thing. Like, Wilder's on the receiving end of the hate again. It's like, what else is new at this point? You know, DAZN, ESPN, they were being crybabies. You know, Sergio Moro was being a crybaby about him not being a fair guy to step aside and let Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury fight for Undisputed. I was getting tired of hearing that. I was just like, come on, man. Like, y'all should be praising the fact that Wilder, who faced a hard loss, wants to run it back with Tyson Fury. Most people would disappear or retire. Ronda Rousey, man. Like, Ronda Rousey in her loss, crushing loss to Holly Holm. I bet y'all would have gave her credit if she came back for a second fight with Holly Holm. But now that she didn't, y'all are calling her name and say, oh, she's done. Like, she's crushed. That was it. You know? So, look at Wilder. He wants to actually come back. You got to give the guy respect for that. So, you know, I'm just glad that in this diva age that a guy like Deontay Wilder actually wants to run it back with Tyson Fury at this point. So, just accept it. Just accept it at this point. And another thing, too, like, for the holdup, I don't think that Tyson Fury was scared. Like, I'm not a Tyson Fury fan. And, yeah, I do think there might have been some controversy with those gloves and things like that. But I don't think that Tyson Fury at all was scared of Deontay Wilder, especially since he fought him twice. You know, the first time, got dropped twice, got back up, out, you know, almost outboxed Deontay Wilder the first time, dominated his second fight. So I'm not really seeing it as the holdup is him being scared. It was really just the politics. I think Tyson Fury was just being greedy. He just wanted more money. He wanted to move on. He kind of wanted to kind of backstab Wilder a little bit. You know, where Wilder gave him a chance, he didn't want to give Wilder a chance. You know, he was trying to use these other excuses like Wilder had disrespected his people or whatever. But I think he was just trying to milk it for everything he could, you know. But now that the fight's happening again, like I said, you can't really put any blame on anybody anymore. We're just going to go ahead and make this thing happen. And I'm just ready to see it July 24th. And I will say this, too. Like, I know a lot of people were happy that this arbitration was won. You know, everybody said, oh, Deontay Wilder, he got it. Well, he got that. He got it granted, but still got to win the fight. And this is it. This is the actual fight coming up. So now that all that politics and court cases and arbitrations aside, we actually got a fight. We got a fight on our hands. And Deontay Wilder, you know, working with his longtime friend and trainer, Malik Scott, they got some things to work on. You know, and I've been watching the videos of him, you know, working on the mitts, you know, working in the ring, you know, hitting the pads and, you know, just doing drills with Malik Scott. You know, they've been working on different things as far as his movement, his left hook, just his reflexes as far as his head movement. You know, I know a lot of people are asking the question, will the training make a big difference? Well, it has to. You know, I don't know yet because it's not fight night, but, you know, it has to at this point. You know, Wilder has to go in there and showcase a new discipline, and he has to showcase some new tools in this fight. Not a completely different Deontay Wilder now. Not a completely different Deontay Wilder, which I'll mention what I mean here in a minute, but he needs to go in there and build off of the loss. Build off of the loss, make better of what he used to do, but also add new things to his arsenal. And by that, I mean, we can't see Wilder change into a boxer overnight. He can't just go in there and turn into a boxer overnight. Some guy that's going to box light on his feet, a la Larry Holmes, and bounce like Ali or something, and try to outbox Tyson Fury this go around. No, it can't be that way. He's got to perfect the puncher in him. And that was all I wanted to see. Like, I wanted to see him perfect the puncher in him. You know, I wanted to see Deontay Wilder become more of a guy with power in both hands, punching with both hands, not just relying on the right hand. I wanted to see him become more calculated and have better balance. You know, and I think that's the things that he needs to be working on in his camp. You know, developing the jab, you know, be more confident in the jab. Don't be as stiff in the upper body, you know, developing a left hook to the body and a left hook upstairs, you know, because sometimes if the right hand misses, you want to have the left hook to fall back on, or vice versa. If the left hook misses, you got the right hand, you know, you got to really become more versatile here, because the more and more you add to your game as a puncher, then you really will put fear in these guys' hearts, because you'll have power in both hands. Like George Foreman, everybody feared this guy because he had power in both hands. You didn't know where the power was coming from. The power in that left telephone pole jab, or the power in that killer right hand. So he kept guys on the back foot. You know, he kept these guys moving. Ken Norton, you know, second version of George Foreman. Alex Stewart. You know, Alex Stewart had a very, very rough fight with him. But, you know, there were... They went back and forth, but there were moments where Alex Stewart was bouncing around because he didn't know where the power was coming from, the left or the right. So Deontay Wilder needs to become more of that type of puncher where he can, you know, deliver power with both hands. Like, Tyson Fury knew that the right hand was the power, the money shot, so he stayed away from it in the second fight. And he avoided it a lot in the first fight. You know, so in this fight here, Wilder has to be more of a calculated puncher, not more of a boxer, a new boxer, or a new Deontay Wilder, just an improved puncher. You know, more so planted, you know, not off balance. He has to be more time, be able to use his timing. I always kind of thought of his body as almost like a longer version of Antonio Tarver. You know, he has to be that type of, you know, cautious boxer with power in both hands, not afraid to let those shots go, you know. So, yeah, hopefully that's something they're perfecting in his camp, you know, being able to dip under the reach of Tyson Fury. And also, one of the things I like to see is uppercuts. Like, I like to see Wilder fight on the inside a little bit more. You know, Tyson Fury has a big target, that big body. You know, you can really just target the chest to the body all day, and eventually the head shots will come, you know. So that's something I really want to see in their camp. You know, hope Malik Scott, they're really working on that, not really just trying to develop him into some type of, you know, quick, fleet-footed boxer, because that's not going to happen overnight. So after a year off and you're about to come back in and face Tyson Fury again, you know, who's definitely been perfecting his boxing, you got to perfect your punching. You got to nullify his boxing with the best version of Deontay Wilder possible. You know, with the best version of Deontay Wilder possible. And that doesn't mean changing into a new Deontay Wilder, but just perfecting the old Deontay Wilder and just, you know, adding more to your game. You know, if you want to be a power puncher, you know, take advantage of every opportunity in there. You know, take advantage of every opportunity that's pointer that's given to you to do that. You know, all your weapons, you know, like I said, not just a right-handed guy, but also a left and a right-handed guy. So, yeah, man, I'm looking forward to the fight. Like I said, July 24th looks like the date in Vegas and Allegiant Stadium. Of course, I will do a breakdown and keys to victory as we get closer. You know, got to, man. This is boxing. It's my number one. But, yeah, man, let me know what y'all thought. But let me know what y'all think, you know, about this fight coming up, you know, for the casual fans. And if you're not familiar with boxing, I definitely recommend you check out the first Wilder Fury fight and the second one, and check out this third one, July 24th. But let's go back to some WMMA. This past weekend, it was crazy, man. Bellator 259, got a chance to watch, you know, all four fights the other night after I got back from my, you know, birthday chill. But the one fight I want to go back and talk about really is Jan Jonan versus Carlos Esparza. Man, like, this fight was fireworks. It was fireworks. You know, I felt like I said, the momentum of both of these fighters, it was going to bring some type of explosiveness. I couldn't really see a stoppage or a submission, whether it be Carlos or Jan's way. But like I said, there's that factor that you just can't put in the fight math, you know, that factor of explosiveness that's going to just come out of nowhere. You know, you can look at the technique all day, like, okay, I can look at the tech, I can look at that takedown defense of Yan Xiaonan, I can look at the wrestling of Carl Esparza, I can look at the speed of Yan Xiaonan, and then that'll kind of give you what a fight might look like. But then there's always that one variable, like explosiveness, you know, just quick attacks, just having a chip on your shoulder, you know, or just being hungry. You know, even hunger you can't factor in. And Carla, she just brought all that right away. You know, she came in there in the first round and said, look, I'm taking this fight to the ground, and that's where we're going to keep it. You know, it's a mixture of IQ and hunger, experience and growth. And like I said, look, that's one thing you can't really pick against whenever you make these picks, is experience and growth. And that's something that Carla had. Like, Yan Xiaonan didn't necessarily have growth. She had some experience, but the experience she was building up over these fighters, she wasn't really doing it with growth. She was doing it with the same style over and over. Like, of course, she does have some takedown defense here and there, but she was beating all these fighters in the UFC with that stand-up game. You know what I mean? She was just constantly beating these fighters with her hand speed, her footwork, and just her overall striking. You know, but there was really no reason for her to feel like I had to step out of the box, which can be dangerous. You know, which I got a video coming where I'm talking about that. One-dimensional leads to an early grave. Y'all know what I'm talking about. But anyways, Carla Esparza, on the other hand, you know, she's had experience and she's had growth. She's had to grow as a fighter, you know, so she's kind of slowly been grinding her way back to the top. And, you know, she came in here and said, look, this is what I know, this is what I got, and this is what I'm going to execute. You know, so she was able to take experience and growth into this fight and just straight up dominate. And it was apparent. It was obvious that Yan Xiaonan didn't have that growth, because she didn't know how to handle this type of physically strong, you know, this type of physical strength from this type of wrestler in Carla Esparza, you know. So it's obvious, you know, she continued to, you know, grow and experience. She continued to get experience, but she just never grew outside of the striking. It was obvious. I mean, the first round right away, I knew, like, whenever Yan stepped into the, she stepped into the power zone, in the takedown zone, in the wrestling zone of Carla Esparza, and Carla ducked under the right hand and she just body locked her and took her down, I was like, oh boy, it's gonna be one of these fights. I was like, Carla's gonna keep her here now. She's not getting up. And then all of a sudden, you know, I saw Carla not just like wrestling, but, you know, just working, you know, ground and pound, grinding the forearm on the face of Yan Xiaonan, you know, squeezing her, you know, just putting a squeeze on her, really kneeing her to the body, taking all the air out of her. You could see it in like Yan Xiaonan's eyes, like, she's not getting up, like, I can't get up. And by the end of the round, you know, Carla just started axing her to the head and just opening up the cut. I was like, okay, all right, now we got a fight. And I think Carla might be on the verge of pulling a stoppage with this. So second round comes, Carla lands a good right hand, shows you that right hand I was talking about, and catches the kick, takes her down, boom, back to where we started, you know, back to where we started. And from there, when she locked in that crucifix, I was like, okay, this is it, because Yan really had no way of like getting that pop, you know, the athletic burst. She couldn't really get that pop up. She couldn't get her off. And from there, I knew that if she just stays locked in, you know, eventually Carla will get that position where she locks her in. She got the crucifix and just finished her off. So yeah, man, shout out to Carla Esparza. You know, again, like, she really wanted it. She really wants to make a statement, and she did it. You know, Yan Xiaonan, she said she was going to score the stoppage, but Carla, she said, look, nah, I'm not today, baby. Not today. I'm going to do that. So she did that. Carla Esparza got to get a lot of credit for that. So with that, I feel like Carla Esparza is that fighter that deserves the title shot. I mean, that's what it takes, right? You know, an impressive winning streak, 5-fight winning streak. Not only that, but an explosive statement made in your title eliminator, right? That's pretty textbook to me. And also being new blood, like Carla said, right? That's textbook to me. That's three reasons right there. She should get the rematch with Rose Namajunas, you know? So yeah, moving forward from here, hopefully she gets that. Rose Namajunas, she's a totally different fighter than she was 7 years ago. I think it'll be an interesting fight. I think it's 50-50. You know, some people say Carla Esparza can't win, but hey, Carla's got a way to win. You know, Carla, don't count her out. Don't count her out. I mean, I feel like Carla, her weaknesses against like physically strong specimens like Joanna and Tatiana Suarez, I don't feel like Rose Namajunas is necessarily that type of physical packs that physical type of strength like that. You know, she doesn't pack that type of strength like these fighters. So Carla Esparza doesn't really have to worry about that. Yes, she has to worry about getting on the inside and the reach of Rose Namajunas. She has to worry about the accuracy and power. But I think she'll be able to handle that in moments, you know. So it's going to be a competitive fight. It's going to be 50-50 going into it. And you got to remember, she does have that mental edge and that win over Rose Namajunas. So that might count for something, even though it was 7 years ago. I think it still counts for something when you go into a fight like this. So, yeah, man, overall, good fight. It was a good strawweight fight. Experience and growth, like I said, man, that's a big part of the game. And you really can't pick against that. You really can't pick against that. But, yeah. That's pretty much all I got for this episode. Like I said, I just want to come back and give y'all the episode we missed over, you know, this birthday weekend. I was just busy, like I said. And, you know, I'll be coming through in the live stream and doing videos, too. So we'll talk more this week. I got more episodes coming. I got to do this episode on Invicta FC on Axis TV. You know, do a full recap episode for y'all. I'll do that next. But, yeah, man. Yeah. So pretty much we can say that for this episode, the highlight finish of this episode is Carla Esparza in her second round TKO over Jan Janna. Pretty much broke that down how it went. Carla went in there, ragdolled Jan Janna, you know, took her down two times in the first round with some nice wrestling. Just, you know, controlled her in ground, side control, you know, just completely grinded the elbow in the face, dominated, opened up the cut. Second round, you know, landed a good right hand, took her to the ground after catching a kick. Locked in that crucifix and just, you know, beat her into submission, beat her until the referee said, hey, that's enough, you know. So good, solid, bloody battle won for Carla Esparza, you know. So she definitely went, earned that title shot, in my opinion. But, yeah, guys, that's pretty much all I got on this episode. Like I said, I'll be back with another one real quick. Make sure y'all subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, and Stitcher. Hashtag CB99 talks. And like I said, you know, give me a rating there, you know, on iTunes and Google Play, you know, 5-star rating, and just write a little review maybe. And subscribe to the YouTube channel as well, you know, Combo Breaker 99. And yeah, man, that's pretty much it for this episode, y'all. I'm Combo Breaker 99. I am out. Subscribe. Peace.